Let's see, good evening. I call to order this special work session for the Monroe Public Schools. Today is Monday, November 11th, 2024. Jamie, could we have roll call, please?
Yes, Dr. Behrens?
Here.
Mr. Huck?
Here.
Mrs. Myers?
Here.
Mr. Van Wachanova?
Here.
Mrs. Williams?
Here.
Mr. Zimmerman?
Here. Could we have stand for the pledge, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
That brings us to discussionary items, and I'm going to turn that over to Superintendent Shaw.
All right, well, good evening, everybody. It's wonderful to see everybody here. So the first item we have on the agenda for tonight, and is just, a lot of this is informational topics for you, but it's the tennis courts. So I asked Dr. Hessen to come in tonight to talk a little bit about our tennis courts, the age of our tennis courts. When was the last time any of you seen our tennis courts?
No.
Out to high school.
A little bit ago.
How'd they look?
Look great. What are you talking about?
I thought they looked okay, but I was used to playing at St. Mary's Park. And
I'm guessing St. Mary's Park was just a tar?
In Larry Alto's backyard.
Yeah.
Oh, grass court?
Absolutely. Why don't we have grass
court? He had a paved court. He had a full court in his backyard.
Really? Okay. Yeah. So Dr. Hessen's been evaluating our facilities, and so when it comes to the tennis courts, I'm going to let him kind of roll through what he has seen and the companies he's had come in to give us some ideas of what can be done at our tennis courts. So, Chet, want to come forward?
Yeah. Everyone has this, right?
No.
Oh. All right.
Seems like every time we see this man, it costs us money.
Just trying to improve the state of education around here, that's all.
You guys will receive these because it's... Because there's two different options, and I need to know which kind of thoughts of one way is, and he'll describe it right there. So
in a nutshell, with tennis courts, there's really two options. Option one is a total kind of redo, a gut. You clear out all the asphalt, you relay asphalt, you repaint, you reline. The other one is sort of to fill in the cracks that currently exist, repaint and reline. What has been happening kind of on repeat for quite some time now is fill in the cracks and then repaint and reline. And in probably the past 15 years, it's been more of a fill in the cracks and not repaint or reline. So at the very least right now, we have some challenges with not only just the safety of the current cracks that are in play, but also the playing surface. If you don't repaint it and recoat it, it's very slick. Where they have actually repaired the cracks, there's a premium product that's called Rightway, R-I-T-E-W-A-Y. The Rightway product is a like stitching material that goes over the cracks. That can come with upwards to a 5-year warranty. So if we were to go with the route of repairing the existing cracks, I would highly recommend you use Rightway as a product. The three service providers that I've gotten quotes for all would use the Rightway product rather than just basically like filling it in with more asphalt. The challenge right now is that we haven't been using the Rightway product, and let's say you have a splinter in the actual asphalt. If you don't stitch it with a product like Rightway, the cracks form with pretty much any type of seasonal change. As soon as water gets in there and is exposed and it freezes, it expands and that crack just continues to get bigger. Usually you have like 6 to 12 months. The last time we got them repaired was spring of 2023. For those that have been out there recently, we have over 1,000 linear feet of cracks that have presented themselves in the past 18 months. The previous process we were using is not adequate. So yes, questions, comments.
When was the last time that was completely taken out and redone?
I don't believe it's ever been
okay. That's
taken
out
and redone.
Thinking.
Yeah. So I think the last time it was painted and recoated was 2001. So we're looking at about a 23-year period. usually of a 10-year life cycle on repainting and recoating the lines in the surface, if you will. So that portion is well overdue. So any questions on really those two options? It's
cost.
So one other question. You said about the...
Oh, get to the point, Jeff.
You said about taking out, would that be the fence too, if they replace the asphalt?
You do not have to remove in either instance if you completely remove the asphalt or just repaint and kind of resurface and fill in the cracks. Okay. You would not have to remove the fencing. One of the options for the fencing is, which is sort of like a enhancement to the product. Currently, if I'm a coach, as an example, a coach cannot actually be on the courts during competition. So imagine this is the tennis courts. We have four courts and then a fence that splits the courts right down the middle. So if I'm a coach, I can stand over here and coach behind the play. But if I'm doing so, then I can't coach on the opposite side. I basically have to run around or borrow my golf cart and get around to the other side to then coach a student athlete on the other side. So most tennis courts, right in the middle, they basically, where the current fence is, you basically have a galleyway so that as a coach, I can stand in the middle, I can coach my players here, and I can just turn around and then coach here. So the current layout doesn't allow for that. You kind of have to literally run around the tennis courts for a couple hours until the matches are over.
Wow, learn something.
Yeah, so no, you don't have to touch the fencing. Obviously, there's some improvements that could be made if we did want to, but it doesn't have to with either direction we go in.
Are the courts relatively level still, or is there settling going on?
If this is the courts and like this is the softball field, baseball field, school is here, this back court right here, if we were to just paint and resurface, it would not really help that court much at all. There's a standing pool of water that is very pesky. You have to kind of broom it off.
Sure.
And if you're not actively using it in your particular playing season, that water just sits. If they completely remove the asphalt and build it back up, mm-hmm. it would take care of that. They've since added a couple of years back outside of baseball where the band practices, it kind of rolls down, and they've increased some of the drainage there. But the drainage closest to softball, it's like a rocky space. If we build it back up, it would solve the issue of that back court there, which is currently not playable at all. You can't use it.
Can we answer Larry's question?
Yep.
Costs. So three bids. One from Total Tennis, just to resurface and repair the cracks, and that's with the five-year right-way warranty. You're looking at just shy of $100,000. Typically, they say on average, just to paint and resurface each court is around $10,000 to $20,000. So it's a decent number based on that.
Did you get a quote for that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. And that was with a five-year warranty for the right way crack repair.
That was for all the courts, correct?
That's all the courts.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So just shy of 100. The one thing about the cracks that I'll mention too, like if a crack goes into another crack, it's like terminates it. That's actually a benefit because a lot of the times, if the crack is just there and it doesn't have a terminal ending, it's just inevitable. It's going to keep running even if you fill in the crack.
So it's kind of like a windshield in your car once you crack it.
Exactly.
It's kind of like the roads we drive on every day.
Yes. That as well.
I mean, that's all I'm visualizing.
Yeah.
Because I haven't seen the tennis courts. So.
Yeah.
Driving, I'm visualizing 4th Street.
Just no speed bumps.
Right.
Yeah. So that's Total Tennis. Pro Track and Tennis Company. It's just over $110,000 for the same type of service. They did quote us for the post system installation as well. That is just essentially the posts that hold the netting, and that's a little over $42,000.
In addition to the $110,000?
Yeah, yep. Court Smiths, which is out of Toledo. I have some experience with them. They did redid our tennis courts at BGSU to just recoat the courts, fill in the cracks, 5-year warranty with the right way system, $85K. So that is the cheaper route if we go that direction. My experience with them is they do a really good job. So I would recommend that if we were to go that direction, we would go with Court Smiths. That'd be my recommendation. In addition to that, they're the only ones that actually bid on a complete redo and to remove the asphalt. Without touching the fencing, we're looking at around $240 for asphalt replacement, the $55K for coating the lines, coating and the lines, and then $9,500 for the post system installation. So a grand total of $304,600 for a complete redo.
And that's with what company?
That is with the Court Smiths. Benefits of going that direction in particular, obviously it's a brand new product, but it also gets us from a lifespan standpoint about 30 years. So 30-year, I guess currently a 50-year problem, resolve for around $305K, gets us a 30-year piece with just resurfacing every 10 years. The current process for around $85K would get us about a 5-year Band-Aid.
30 years not guaranteed, though. It's just
no, there's no warranty, but just a general lifespan of a tennis court in the Midwest.
They give you a warranty on that?
They don't give you a warranty on the complete asphalt redo. No.
Oh.
Not even like 5 years?
I'll have to look into it. I think there is some limited warranty, but they're not going 30 years out. I can get more information on the warranty pieces there. Yeah.
You said recoating every 10 years?
That's the typical lifespan.
And
yep.
How much would that cost? About the same?
About 85. Yep.
Did you get more than one quote for the recoat and cracks, or was that the only company you got a quote from?
It's the only company that would provide a quote. The other two companies, one's based out of Missouri, and they're not going to do asphalt work here. The other one's based out of Columbus, and they said financially it would not be prudent for them to do it. The Court Smiths being in Toledo is the one that decided they would do it.
And if we did this, this would be in the spring, I would assume.
Yeah, so timeline. From a coaching staff perspective, they want it done. So if we have to modify our playing schedule early in the spring to get this done, we'll just go out on the road. The time frame for this, weather pending, is about a 2 to 3 week stretch. So they can conceivably get it done, and we would be able to play on it in the late part of this spring. If the weather doesn't help us, then we could wait till after the season and get it done in June.
Where's the money coming from?
It's a great question.
Yeah. If we do it, and talking with Mr. Saladin, he recommended that we looked at it, that we go with the replacement route.
News always better, believe me.
What's that?
News always better. I agree.
Well, in this situation, that we put that 85,000 into it and still have dips, and if you don't get every crack 100%, it's like patching out on your asphalt. A bad winter, a couple mixed cracks, and now you have not a good system.
Would you have to redo the base underneath the asphalt at all?
Mm-hmm.
No.
So, here's what runs through my head. The pool, which is still an unresolved matter, and a good portion of that money is allocated out of what fund?
The pool?
Yeah.
The pool is not allocated out anywhere.
Where would it be if it was, because it is a project that we are currently supposed to be engaging in and looking into based on our last meeting.
So the when it comes to the pool, the conversation was, you can take and put $1.5 to $3 million into the pool, so it becomes the competitive side. But what was pointed out to us is that you still have a 6-lane pool in a Division I school. So you would, and so the thought patterns were then to go to a new pool.
Right.
Okay. So the new pool, that's a $10 million bond. That's a bond. That's not coming from singing fund and or the general fund.
So that's new information, kind of, because when we left it, it was a let's look and see. And we got all those project proposals, but then it kind of dropped there. That's why I asked the question.
The pool one there, that one's, there is more information going to be coming forward on that, because it's really the pool, and there's other things when we look at even the project completions in some areas of our district. You know, you're looking at potentially like a completion bond of some sort. So that's a conversation with PFM on the finance.
So why did we do all those meetings?
Because we had to gather the information.
Oh.
Just like this is right here. Chad shared this information around the tennis courts. It's good to know what the problems are with the tennis courts and the potential ways to resolve it. And then this group right here will have the opportunity to figure out which way do we go.
Right.
We could do nothing also.
We also talked about the choir and the band space, and we started talking about that approximately 2 years ago. And we were like, you know, that's kind of something down the road. Yep. And they are a, I don't know what you would label them. I see their thing is the same as like tennis. Tennis is a sport, people play. Band and choir is a, you know, something that people do as well. So, you know, we look at that and you know, we haven't gotten anywhere on that. So I would like to know where we're at with the band and the choir stuff, because that literally was 2 years ago.
Yep. And so for the one classroom, we did fill in that pit this year. We do know that.
We did fill it in?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. Yep. So all the floors in that area now are flat. They're there. And so it's all to the degree of how much we want to do in that room. And so, again, when we began to look in that, even at the area, that's also part of potentially what would be considered like a completion bond, because we look at both the auditorium and then the band and the choir rooms. And in talking with our old band director was about sound buffers, and then I think it was even a sound screen, some better quality items in those areas. So that's, we're talking a lot more money. And just like when we talk about even like the elementaries, it's all, if we don't pass a bond, it's all sinking fund. That's where all the monies are at for that.
Now you got to my point.
Yeah,
so this is coming out of sinking fund. That's why, you know, that makes sense to ask those questions, you know, because we only have limited funds in the sinking fund. And I'm not saying the tennis court shouldn't be done, and I'm not saying it's not a viable project, and I'm not saying that the tennis players shouldn't have a new state-of-the-art, you know, playing field like the football players got. You know, I'm not suggesting that. I'm just saying with limited resources that we have, you know, what is the best use of those, and how did tennis get above some other stuff?
I wonder if it might not be wise to rank those items. I know that we talked to Mr. Kohler, and he did give us some rankings. We used to have like a physical resource committee that used to delve into them a little bit more. I wonder if that might not be a good idea. Then we can rank which we think is best.
I know we talked about that before, and I know Mr. Kohler was going to get us a paperwork back on that. And did we get it? I don't remember.
I got some anyway. I don't know about everybody else, but I thought he was going to make a presentation to us.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that how the money is being spent in a manner for which those highest needs are met first. And the most fiscally responsible is being met, because this is the first time we heard about tennis courts. That makes sense. Yeah. Okay.
Well, there's gonna be. I'm gonna just say this one. There's gonna be probably a lot of firsts at times. You're gonna hear stuff that'll get brought forward. So like.
Yeah. So if we could get more information, is what I'm suggesting on the sinking fund, and we get more money, we get a rundown of what is going on, what the plans are, like Larry said, what's going on. Then we put the tennis court in there with everything else. And then we look at it as a totality. I think that's very fiscally responsible in using our funds in an appropriate way.
Well, we have a good doctor here. Maybe we should ask him if there's any other areas that you think should be improved in your...
You want to give a wish list now?
I kind of think there is.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Go.
we have a number of deficiencies with old buildings. Locker rooms is a problem. We have some gender equity issues within our locker room spaces at the high school in particular. That's something that we need to move the needle on and take a look at. With that said, that is probably part of a larger bonded project and not something that would be relevant to really build out or sink money into if there's opportunity for new. So I think a number of the things that I have on a priority list are somewhat contingent on a larger bond. Whereas the tennis courts, it's a great space for the tennis courts. It's a reasonable number that we can get done in a short period of time, as opposed to where I think the pool is definitely a priority, but that's a $10 million problem that we're not going to solve in 12 months' time. So for me, a issue with cracks on a tennis court where it becomes either unplayable or unsafe becomes an issue that like rises in priority. And in terms of like fiscally responsible, I think that doing new 30-year timeline with a plan of every 10 years intermittently, recoding, resurfacing, have that on your calendar to make sure that that's being prepped for, and we have a sinking fund that's like stashing away that money so that 10 years down the line, if it's 85K, extrapolate that out 10 years, we have the money to be able to do that periodically. That is a plan that we can bite off sooner rather than later and have a huge improvement for both our boys and our girls programs.
And I have to believe if a ball hits a crack, it's going to bounce in a different fashion.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yes. And your ankle will roll in a different direction, too, if you step in a crack. Yeah.
So I think you just made my point. To know where we're at with sinking fund now and plan out, I think, is a very, very reasonable thing. And including in those foreseeable things that the tennis courts will continue to need for structuring. So that I think it's a good idea to start there. Let's take a look at the funds and let's take a look at what we can do with them. So that's why I think.
Yeah. And that's why it's here tonight for information. It'll be brought back at a later date. So. Cool. Well, thank you, sir.
You bet.
Appreciate that. So next on our agenda is TransFinder. And so we've asked Patty to come in and help us with that tonight. Chet, you don't have to stay unless you want to.
He loves to stay.
So TransFinder is the routing software that we use in our school district for our buses. And I'm going to just let Patty kind of just take the lead right from there because I don't want to say anything incorrectly, except for I do want you to share how long we've used TransFinder and in the current fashion that we've used it without any upgrades.
Well, we've used it since I've been here, and I'm on my eighth year. So it was installed before I was here. So during COVID, right after end of COVID, we upgraded to web-based. So we didn't have to sit at our desk because we were tied to the computer towers and couldn't work anywhere else. Other than that, that's the only upgrades we really have done. So TransFinder has come a leap and bound, and a lot of our issues with communicating with parents, safety, could be solved with upgrading.
Can you do me a favor? Can you explain what TransFinder is again?
So
we're going to go right through that here.
So TransFinder is our routing system. Right. So that's where we actually get in and make our routes for our students. It's hooked back to PowerSchool, allows the schools to know what bus number the kids are assigned to. So right now, that's what we use it for. We input our trips. We bill out of there for our trip billing. Everything is done in TransFinder. So it's kind of like PowerSchool, but for buses. And we are not utilizing it to what the capability is out there. So one of the things since I've been in the district is our communication with parents.
We used to have TransFinder, at least when we first became aware of it, had a GPS on it. So like if a parent wanted to check where the bus was, they could just go on the site and say the bus is right here. They'll be to my site.
So that is a feature.
Just like UPS does.
That's a feature, but not that Monroe carries.
Okay, so it's just not updated.
Like do,
yes.
But we have never taken that step to obtain
And that's not included in here?
It is.
That is, yes.
So in other words, we don't have that up.
No.
We don't have that module.
Oh.
Think of that term too. We don't have that module. No.
Yeah.
When we say that what she just described is all that we use the program for is to route buses. So all the student data comes in from PowerSchool into TransFinder. That way she can put dots on there and they can route the buses and that's it.
We've only upgraded our maps in TransFinder once since I've been here. So you know how many times streets get added? They change names, new subdivisions. That's how behind we are in the times. It is very inundating. And everything that we have issues with in our community with our parents, a lot of it could be solved. So when you're talking about the module, it's called Where's My Bus? So the parents can sign up. They can get a notice that their bus is 5 minutes away from their stop. It solves the problem of us calling, you know, so-and-so bus is at your stop. You need to come. We need to get your kid off the bus because we require first grade and under to have a parent there.
So how much extra is this
going to
cost that new module?
So here's what we're going to do. We're going to go right through this doc.
Oh, okay.
Because it literally, she's going to talk about going from pro over to plus, what that looks like.
So
and then
plus is the one that would have
each of these sections features. Gets into it. When we're going to get into some tech stuff, we're going to kind of have a conversation with Mr. Payne through that. And because of some things we've already done there, and so some of these numbers could shift, okay? So we're showing you right now if, like, the worst case, okay? But at least what we did is we went out and we had a conversation with TransFinder and said, all right, show us what you guys are capable of. We went through what we've been struggling with. And so what they've done is they've mocked that up. And then you can also see it in a three-year format, too. So you want to go ahead and start with that first, moving from pro over to plus. That's on the very front page.
Yeah, so plus is going to give us a lot of data analysis. So we just had to cut three runs because we are down drivers. And it took us over a week to figure out how to absorb those runs. That's three or four of us looking at it and trying to make sure we didn't miss something up. This plus program, we could go in and we could tell it what we needed to do. And it's going to feed back to us the most optimal way to do it. So we're always going to be looking at what the best way is for our routes.
Is it using AI technology?
That I can't answer you.
Dave?
I think it does, yeah.
It sounds like it would.
Probably for the last 20 years has been using it. It's just not at the level it is now. So that's a hard question to answer because...
The program doesn't tell you that?
Well, AI is just a term.
Yeah.
I mean, so for instance, you could have a camera on your front door 10 years ago, but now the camera will tell you when an animal walked by or a package is there. That's AI coming in and detecting it. So it is using AI.
Yeah.
Because that's how it's making those determinations quickly.
It's a data calculation.
Yes.
It's just on high-speed steroids right now.
Yeah. And we're on the... Slug through the mud.
We have no
level
steroids.
Right now.
You want to get rid of some employees?
Steroids, huh? Wait till the robots.
It definitely would free us up to do some other things. We don't lack for things to do, trust me on that. So, but it allows us custom reports and data, and it would provide us a lot more information than we have. Currently, right now, if you ever look up Google Map, you can see like people's houses. We can't see that. But in the new system, we would. So we could actually say if there was a problem with a student on this bus and we need to get them on a different bus, we could actually encapsulate their house and assign them to that bus. Right now, we have to go in and we have to fake it and make them pin dot into that busing area in order to get that kid into that routing area. So we could do things more effectively and efficiently for the correct data. Right now, we just manipulate what we need the TransFinder to do to get the results we want. Stop Finder, I don't know the order they're on there, Andy. Stop.
Next one is Way.
Wayfinder, okay. So Wayfinder is a way for us to delete, add, move stops. It's basically building everything in there. It'll take attendance for us. Okay. So one of the things that that we're looking at is we all have these nifty badges, right? So right now, my people have a little clicker, and they count how many kids come off the bus and how many kids go on the bus. And there's a lot of errors to that. There is a system where they can come in with their badge and they can click on a little module and they can click on that they're on that bus. And it will automatically know that that student boarded that bus. They can check off the same way.
So they'd have to actually do something physically in the affirmative, correct? In other words, it's
yes.
not going to, if I bring this, yeah. it's not going to scan.
It's going to come, when they get to the stop, it's going to come up on their tablet with pictures, so all the school pictures will be in there, with the kids' names, and say, these kids are assigned to this stop. So high school prevents a problem for us. Kids like to hop on buses, see if they can sneak on without drivers knowing. So when they go, if they're not assigned to that bus, what happens is it comes up red behind the student's picture. And then the driver knows that student's not assigned to my bus.
But Patty, is there something that we can go even further, that when they come on the bus, okay, the bus vehicle itself
detects that? You're talking about like an RF reader?
Yeah, and that's what it is. It's a little square.
Without them actually putting something
right.
in this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of like our doors. It's a tap with their badge.
Well, I wonder, can we even go further? Because again, it's going to not avoid the problem that we want to. In other words, kids are going to get on the bus, they're simply not going to scan on. How can we, like, if they have a chip, though, and it just reads it, just like, mm-hmm. when you do
yeah.
to, I forgot,
no,
like the quartz.
On their backpack.
You don't have to scan in. I mean, it's
in fine. Their hand.
And
no,
I don't know
no,
if it's
no.
if it gets to be.
Oh, no one said. So I wanted to ask. Like,
no.
Seriously.
So Larry, to that point, when we actually asked that question of the company,
yeah.
Was this: if it's all about how close you have to be to the scanner when you come
right.
through. So she has her badge, she scans on. Boom. He has. Boom. You don't. But now she's the driver. She goes, "Oh, Larry, you don't have it." No, I don't. She sees your picture and she can actually tap on it and load you. Larry. You don't belong on my bus. So they have a double way that they can check you in if you don't have it onto the bus.
Why can't the bus driver, when they come on and have the computer sitting there, like just tap the kids as they come off the
driving.
Screen? Because I don't know how kids are going to remember badges and whatnot.
They will. They honestly, because if they don't, then the driver can tap it. It's a habit.
Yeah.
It's just like our employees, my employees especially, when they had to start carrying their badges. You know, once they got told you need your badge to get in the door, then they started doing so and getting in the door with it.
Many what? Students do wear the library for lunch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they're
it's on their possession.
So here's
kindergartners and first graders and second graders and third graders wear badges and they're able to remember to put them on and so
like.
But we'll have
what grade are we talking about to implement
as long
this?
As they have them.
I thought this was
no. This is
going to
be
this
will be system wide. We'll navigate that. Yeah. But on that, you can put it on the on their backpack. But what this saves is this: we got accused last year of kidnapping a student. Okay. They did. Parents accused us of kidnapping students asleep on the bus. And so they called out on the radio. So every bus calls out. And all they would have had to have done is, if with this system, is on, oh, wow, Scott, I see, we could actually, she would have seen that Scott is on bus 27. He is on your bus. You need to go back and find him.
That's
he's been
what
checked
Snapchat
in.
Location was for. Find your kid. Don't they have locators?
They do have locators, yeah. I know what you're talking
yeah.
about, yeah.
I mean, there's location services
there
on every
but not every student has a phone, though.
The other thing so. That ties into this
well,
is...
if they don't have a phone and I have a card, I mean, then we have the same problem.
Yeah.
The other
what's
benefit
the
of this is to the parent communication side. The parent can
yeah,
opt in, so when their kid scans onto the bus, they'll get a text alert that says, Tommy boarded bus 35.
Nice.
When the student gets off the bus...
Yep.
It would say Tommy exited bus 35. Our transponder guy shared how it saved some kid running away.
Yep.
Because the parent knew when the kid was supposed to get off the bus and was able, and he didn't come home.
Yep.
So they were able to enact right away with that. So we have a problem where we have missing kids all the time because they get put on the wrong bus.
We have missing kids all the time?
Yes.
Rephrase that.
Well,
we have never lost.
Yeah.
We have
never lost
a single child.
They get put on a different bus, and the parents have no idea.
No, it is being recorded. Thank you.
Or they get off at another friend, and so we get the call.
Yep.
Where's my child?
Thank you.
Yeah, we have kidnapped their kids.
We didn't kidnap them. They're somewhere in our.
Kidnapping and losing.
So we have to find the, we have to find them.
Actually got stated to me, so.
This would eliminate that because we would know what bus the child was on. The school would know what bus the child got on as well. It's instant. So we would know Tommy's on bus 35. What happens now is we call out everybody, you know, the school lets us know what bus they think they put the kid on. Mm-hmm. And we go, hey, bus 35, can you check for so-and-so? And it's always a little one. That's hard to see. And they call out, nope, nobody's responding. Then we go through and then we call the whole school fleet out. Everybody check your bus. So then we go one by one. Nope, don't have the child. Nope, don't have the child. Nope, don't have the child. And we're in our office pulling our hair out because we like, we know it got put on somewhere.
We lost a child.
It's somewhere. So the child gets aboard and then all of a sudden the original bus will go, oh, guess who just popped their head up?
Or we could put a call out, all buses need to stop and park your buses safely and
get
go
up,
do a
go
check.
Walk the bus. It happens a lot.
I didn't know it was a thing.
It'd be easier to do a brake check.
it happens
sleep,
a lot.
I'll wake up, take the floor.
No, it's not easy to do a brake check. Right. Put that on the record very quickly.
Is that when the seatbelts come in?
Nope.
Yeah, slam on the brakes.
They're squirrel checks.
Question 2026.
So a lot of the things and big communication we get from parents is the fact that they don't hear from us. Why is the bus late? We don't know this. We're standing outside. It's raining. It's cold. All these type of things.
What they do in our day?
I don't know. They lost kids, I think.
Yeah. Wonder Bread. You just, you know, you got off. You walked home. You know.
Get most of them back.
Yep.
And you walked uphill both ways to school.
So then next up is Trip Finder.
So Trip Finder is an upgrade to what we're doing now. So here's the beautiful thing. Right now, we input data several different times in several different devices and several different systems, which means there's more chance for error. Trip Finder would allow us to assign people, as many as we wanted users. They would take the trips, enter them into Trip Finder as it's called now, and then it could automatically go to the business office and student services, and you guys could electronically approve the trips for your field trips.
That's
your school
trip finder.
Mm-hmm. So right now what happens is the school fills out a paper, they send it to us, they send it into the business office, and everything has to get all the signatures, then it comes back to us, and then we gotta make sure we have all the signatures, and then we gotta hope that it was entered in right, so that when we're putting the trip out for bidding for our people, that everything's taken care of, then we gotta bill it out, get all the information to the business office so they can bill it out. This would save all that extra data entering, all that would be gone.
Do we have a lot of errors in this department?
No, but it takes a lot of time. So I would say right now, like just on sports trips alone, we spend over between 6 to 10 hours a week inputting trips. And about time you go through and input the trip, and then you gotta get the information out to the drivers to sign up for it. Then you've got to give them all the trip information and directions. And then you've got to get the billing back from them. Then you've got to enter all that in. Then we got to print all that billing and the receipts and everything, all the trip requests, and that goes into the business office.
I can understand how that could be super beneficial. My question would become, if you're giving people access to do that from their mobile device, we have a lot of turnover in mm-hmm. a lot of areas. What happens?
So my advice would be to recommend like head secretaries. So the
they
you know like
to monitor to make sure that.
So they would put the trips in at their level at the building. Mm-hmm. So the trips would come into the principal. They would enter it in.
So it's not the actual like the coach or someone that's
no.
doing it. Okay, I misunderstood.
Who does that now? Would it be the head secretary?
They forward it off, okay. But they don't enter anything in.
Right, I'm just going to think that probably the secretary in the building probably got enough to do without throwing this on the plate, too.
I'm sure it crosses their desk at some point.
Oh, it does.
The administrator sign off on it, so they're part of
yeah.
that process.
Chet and Holly have to sign off on every athletic trip before it even goes over. Because they have to, one of the things we require out of them is to begin to look at the time of dismissal so that they're not trying to get out way too early, because that creates a conundrum in our transportation department to
confirming where they're going, number of students going to be on that bus, all that kind of stuff. So the athletic office has to still make that confirmation, just like each regular office, if they're doing a field trip, has to confirm specific information.
But the difference now is they don't have to send us an email, they don't have to call us. With this system, they could just quickly look on, yep, your trip's confirmed, you're good to go.
Right. So on the previous one, because we're looking at cost for all of this, on the previous one, there was like 45 users. So in my head, I'm like, that would be the bus drivers, that would be, you know, that need the wayfinder.
Yep, and that's there. That's
this
talking buses,
this one says
yeah.
There's quantity of one, and it's $5,000.
That's because it's the whole module, versus the 45 is how many buses we have.
So you can have multiple users
unlimited
data, but you just need one system at $5,000, and then what's the additional cost for over the repeated years?
It's broke down the next two columns.
I see it.
The 1250.
What's the reasoning for that?
Oh, it's an annual
maintaining.
Maintenance fees.
The
maintenance cost.
Yeah. It's technology. It's ongoing maintenance fee.
Just a question.
Yep.
Do
yeah.
people
in
Putting Gated need to have
they're
licenses?
They're almost the same cost
no.
as the initial.
Yep. So on the Wayfinder, that's going to be because they're going to be updating maps.
Oh. So right now, our drivers get turn-by-turn directions on a piece of paper. So if you think about it, especially since we have like young drivers, they fold their paper in half like this, and that's kind of what they're doing. They look for their next, oh, I got to turn left, I got to turn right. This would actually provide a tablet and give them turn by turn, so they would hear audibly.
So they haven't had a GPS this whole time or some other system?
No. They use a phone when they're driving.
They can't use their phone or they're in violation of their CDL.
Well, no, I meant a mounted thing rather than a piece of paper. I can't drive with a piece of paper in my hand looking at directions.
But you can't use a phone or
you can have electronic device.
But you can use a piece of paper?
Sure.
Yep.
That's just crazy.
Well,
yep.
Yeah, you have to go to Lansing.
At least the lady on the phone can tell you to turn right now.
Yeah, but you can't turn right now. You have to look first.
So those are the type of things that our drivers look at. And they don't, we had a lot of people, we had a lot of drivers that have moved into this area that don't know Monroe, too.
So that's a good thing. If you're going back to that wayfinder at the very top, is that voice turn by turn. And so turn right, and it says next street. Your stop is 50 feet, 30 feet. And so that wayfinder is a really nice part of the program for our drivers.
They would, that's got the AI driver in it?
That's coming.
It would be a fixed device. They would bring it in at night to make sure it's not out in the weather and that. But because it would be a fixed mounted device, and because it is part of the bus system, it would be allowed by the commercial driver's license. So it meets the federal motor carrier.
What are we talking about?
The difference between having a phone in your hand or a piece of paper. It's against the law to have any type of electronic device
in your
hand.
I understand that. I thought they'd be mounted or something.
These would be, yes.
Yeah.
These would meet all the code for that.
I just can't believe they've allowed paper.
Yeah. We kill a lot of trees.
I don't have a problem with that. I just don't think people should be driving.
The difference, too, it would be an instant update, too. So if there's something going on, or like the Stewart Road where we had to reroute, we'd be able to do it instantaneously.
Yeah, paper never crashes.
That's right. I do not like trees.
All right, so viewfinder. Let's see. Viewfinder would allow unlimited users to look up our students. So right now, a head secretary, if they want to know what bus a kid rides or know the detail, they can stick it in the same information as like a parent and hope they spelled everything right and it pops back up. So Viewfinder would give us the opportunity for us to give whoever we deemed access, and they would be able to look up limited information. So they could type in the student's name and look up the student's busing by that. They could verify if they were brought into an alternative address. They could verify the bus number, the stop location. It would give them limited scope information. They couldn't change our routes or anything like that, but it would provide them instantaneous information. We have something called LE, which I just discovered from our sales rep. So I've been trying it with a floater secretary that's been working with me, and it's like night and day. To be able to try to type in information versus looking up specific information, it's been really, really nice for her in our office. And she doesn't have access to the routing side of things. But she can look up instantaneously and see what bus a kid's supposed to be on.
So I'm looking at, you know, this is $4,000.
Yep.
I thought you said at the beginning that this was linked up with PowerSchool. Therefore, people could look up bus routes through PowerSchool and know what buses kids rode. So why do we need to spend $4,000?
Because they only can see a bus number.
Yeah.
Why do they need to see more?
Because you need to tell a parent where their stop location is. So they get to the stop on time. They need to know what time they'd be out there for the bus.
We do that now.
No. So what happens now is they get a bus number in PowerSchool. That's all that's imported.
But at the beginning of the school year, and I believe this just happened, there's a notification that says out that goes and says, hey, you ride these roads, the bus stops here. I mean, that's how these kids know where to go and where to be, right? Am I missing something?
So routes are continually updated. And if kids get added country stops, kids get picked up at their house. Right. So you add one or two houses, and you now changed everybody's time. So parents need to be able to say, this is my updated time.
I thought it was a 15-minute window.
5 to 7 minutes on either side of the stop time is what parents are allowed.
I'm just looking at the value of that. That's
yeah. Yep. The difference is then we get a lot of parents who have alternative transportation. There's parenting time. There's babysitters. We would be able to see, they would be able to see that that's been updated and what address the kid is routed to. And be able to say, your stop is 5th and Adams. This is your time.
And we can't do that now.
Not unless they go through us in our office. Currently, all they can do is say, you're on bus 35.
Okay.
Oh, I thought that's what the route finder, or I don't know which program it was now. What's the, you know how like Amazon says, you know, your package is here, it's going to arrive in 5 minutes. Is that like Wayfinder? Which one is that one?
That's the parenting side of it, which is
Stop Finder,
which we haven't gotten to yet.
Oh, we have. Okay.
Couple more.
Right. Yep.
Couple more.
That could be be a double-edged sword, though.
Oh, you're right.
So Viewfinder has a lot of benefits. It actually would give hands information to our offices and our personnel. And they wouldn't have to call us and send us emails all throughout the day to find that information either. So StopFinder is...
So GPS Connect is $5,375, and that's to do what?
GPS Connect is putting a GPS system on the buses.
So I thought Wayfinder included that because it was going to be the turn-by-turn map.
You have to have a GPS physically on the bus.
So if we got Wayfinder and we didn't buy GPS, Wayfinder wouldn't be usable.
Correct.
Yeah.
So in reality, those two are, what, $13,000. So that program itself is literally $13,000.
Yes, and then when you add the tablets in, it will...
Plus the annual updates of that's going to be
Now, one of the things with adding the cradle points that just got installed on the buses is that those have GPS. So what we have discovered is we can see a little bit on where our buses are. The question is whether we can now piggyback onto that system and use that for this part of the system on the GPS side.
So we don't know that yet.
We don't
know
that yet.
That's a question mark. This is one of the questions.
This one's a question mark.
Yeah, that can we just use what she was describing, the GPS we already have in our buses to meet the what they're doing right here and to feed their feed that other
information. When will we have that information?
Oh, that'll be, we're again, this is an item where we're just giving you this information of what we're looking into. When we come back with the, we'll have actually go, this was solved, and here's the exact.
We just kind of discovered that in the last week, week and a half.
We just got it installed a couple of weeks
ago.
Got one installed.
The cradle points.
We approved that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did that last year.
Technically.
I figured we did. I just, how, what'd you say?
I don't think you approved it, but it was approved by the board.
Okay.
It was
that vote? Yeah, okay.
It was the one that was a grant?
Yeah.
I wouldn't agree to wireless 5G on the bus. You're right. I concur.
So the great thing about it is knowing that it was Kevin, and he pulled up, and he's like, hey, look, I can see where your buses are on the road. So we're trying to look on the back end to see if we can connect it to that, because that will significantly reduce the total cost of this.
But the GPS Connect is not hardware, it's software, correct?
It's a physical device on the bus.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
So it is hardware.
Hardware.
Yes.
But it's also software, so what we got to figure out is if Transfinder will utilize that access.
Okay, use that hardware for the software.
I can almost guarantee you it'll be proprietary, whatever you find.
But if we cannot, then it's hardware.
They'll be like, no.
It won't work.
So in this case, when we talked Transfinder, we didn't have anything. This whole quote is around the fact that this is a point that we would need to have on there.
Another reason you may want to consider not, only because if this is a package deal and you're paying that maintenance and something happens, since it is dependent on that hardware, if you're utilizing another piece of hardware that isn't under warranty, it could be, we really have to do some research before we make the recommendation.
Well, yeah, because if they're going to say, hey, you don't buy our stuff, we're going to void the warranty, we might be looking for another option, right? I would think so.
Yeah.
So
I think this is our third system for bus routing and things of that sort that I can recall anyway. So we might have a fourth now.
So StopFinder is the last component, and this is the parent component to this.
How much money do we spend on this app then? Is it like something that's done every few years?
So every year we have a maintenance fee of, what is it?
I'd have to pull the bill.
I have to pull it up. On what we're currently using for the GPS only?
No, what we're using for the software for them to host it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't have all these features. It would, back in, I want to say, this is way back, early 2000s, we had Polypod. Right. It was through Wayne Risa.
And we never used it.
Went for Transfinder, which was a local-based system, through the same company.
We paid for it.
Then, like, we paid for it, but didn't use it.
Well, we were using it. It was just, it wasn't nearly what we needed.
Yeah. I think actually Rick Moncom got that, didn't he?
Way back when. It was with, I'm trying to remember his name.
Ron Smith.
Monday?
No, before Ron Smith.
Kim Hooper.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
That's a few days ago.
So this has been the same system. It's just been gradually out of path, and we just kept upgrading. Well, this is a new product they have that we want to jump over to. So it's the same company, but new product. Okay. More features.
Yep.
And we're currently spending $13,000 a year.
For the routing and the base program.
For maintenance, essentially, right?
Hosting.
Hosting and service agreement.
All stuff.
Yes.
You can no longer buy, I'd have to really look into it if you can even buy software anymore. Like, just own it.
Yeah.
Even Adobe was the last one that said, nope, it's a yearly fee.
Yeah, it's a continual.
Are there other companies that do this?
They're a sole provider in this.
For routing?
They cornered routing. The market?
For school buses?
Yeah.
Transfinder is number one.
There's others. They're just rated number one.
Every trucking company in the world uses tracking.
My girlfriend, that's what she does.
School buses.
Obviously.
Logistics.
Amazon.
And it also has to, like Patty said earlier, when you look at your student information system, it has to play with the routing software. And it, unfortunately, it does have a big niche in all the student information system, so it will sync up daily with any kind of, so that way if a secretary updates an address, change, it syncs with Transfinder.
It's logistics software for buses, for school buses, actually.
Yeah. At 10 o'clock every night, PowerSchool and my system talk. And so if a kid has changed schools, if a new kid has been enrolled, if an address has changed, that all updates.
Currently with what we have.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
And plus we have GPS.
Sort of GPS with those cellular.
I just really don't know like what we're using.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry for all the
questions.
No,
you're fine.
I really don't know.
I would not track that from the record, scratch it.
Scratch what?
The GPS thing.
Too late. You see the red ink?
Okay.
I brought a pen today, sorry.
So StopFinder is one of the parts of the system that actually excites me the most. So parents right now have to call us, where's the bus, why is it late? The biggest beef they have is communication. So these softwares allow parents to sign up. They can know if it's pouring down rain 5 minutes before their bus is headed into their little zone area. If buses are late, we can actually draw a map. Let's say we got a bus stuck by a train, because that happens, and the bus can't get turned around. We're waiting for a sheriff deputy to come out and get our bus out of the situation. We can ask the driver what the last stop was. We can go into the, pull the map up, draw around the stop she hasn't hit yet, and push a message out to those parents. So they would have real-time information. Currently, what has to happen is we have to get a hold of someone, we got to pull the data out of PowerSchool, we got to send messages, and it takes longer. This is a fast, quick message and update for the parents. So
seems
they'll
like
know.
We've become over-inundating and giving people information.
This is something they would have to sign up for. So part of the things that we hear all the time on our end is communication when there's a delay with their buses. And, you know, having to be stuck outside when a bus is late. Because they're outside with their kids at that stop waiting in the morning. And they could be out there at the end of the day waiting, and all of a sudden a bus is 20 minutes late. No, go ahead. Oh, yeah.
But I think that could reduce the volume at times when there's something going on that you know about and we can send a message out. I think it could be definitely beneficial.
It's the number one complaint that I hear from parents since being here at the school system is, why didn't we get a call? You know, well, we're busy solving the problem, so we physically can't make those calls out. But this is a way that we can communicate quickly with our parents. And we can set parameters, like if the bus is going to be more than 15 minutes late or 10 minutes late, is it the time that you would get a message? But when you're standing outside in the rain, I mean, we have parents that don't like their high schoolers to walk a block. So they want to know their kids are getting picked up. They want that communication line.
Well, you have to think about, even if they're walking a block or a block and a half, it's pitch dark outside.
Yep.
And if there's a 15-minute window and they got there a few minutes early, they could literally be standing outside in the middle of winter for 20 minutes.
Correct.
So that's a very real thing. So would kids get access to that as well? Because the kids would be the ones out there standing.
They would be able to sign up via their cell phones.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, just like a parent would be able to.
Okay.
So does this part right here allow for the parents to see the location of the buses?
It does give them a way to see where the bus is kind of on their route. The feature that, I don't know if there's a way you can turn on and off things. The big thing is when they can set a parameter, like if it's 5 minutes away.
Right.
And they can get an alert. I know every day we have to call parents because parents aren't at the stop to get their little ones off the bus. And they could get a text. The parents are already on their phones anyways. And they would get that alert text to say, hey, your bus is 5 minutes out now. And they could head to the stop. We spend a lot of time calling parents and calling schools and taking kids back to schools because we can't get parents to stop
to get
there. We have
to see whether this really cuts it down or not.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, one of the things that came up, and this is busing related, so I don't know where else to bring this up except for now, was there were incidents that happened on a bus that were not documented in PowerSchool. And at the time we were told that the bus, and correct me, Cindy, they don't document any bus incidents in PowerSchool. Because we had an incident come up about all the bus incidents that were not in PowerSchool. And so when I'm looking at this technology, so where is all that happening? If it's not happening in, like, where's that happening?
So the drivers actually now are just being issued, though there's training happening through Kickboard, which you've heard a lot about Kickboard from Jackie and Andrew. That's what the teachers are putting discipline. That the bus drivers are all being issued a device.
School device, iPad.
An iPad, so that they can actually do the same thing too.
So it will now be applicable that we can look at for discipline hearings?
If it kicks over to us, if it's...
Well, that's what I'm asking.
Yeah.
So right now what happens is they would write out a piece of paper for a misconduct. They get logged on a Google form that we have. So we have one that's for elementaries and we have one that's high school, middle school. We don't log anything into Power School. That would be the school's responsibility once they're sent over if they log them in anywhere.
So what happens to your log?
It's shared with all the principals and that.
Because there's a big disconnect there, and we found that disconnect when there were some incidents on the buses, and so that was when the question was, and I don't ever remember it being brought back up to a resolution. So if we're putting together, like, money, like, I would think that would be an important component that we would want to focus on. I get it. It's cool that you can, like, text and do those things, but that kind of information is vital to the functioning of the system into what's going on.
So we are tackling this from the same system the schools are using with Kickboard. So the drivers now, they just went through another training today, get to log in behavioral reports to the school. And it gets to wherever those get sent or set up on the school side for those to get those messages. If they want to send a referral, just like the teachers would in the building, they now do it through Kickboard.
So it's based on the bus driver's interpretation of the events that lead to the documentation, which leads to the discipline or behavioral.
They mark down what they observed and what they have been reported to turn in, yes.
And that becomes absolute?
Well, it's based on they have training, so the increased radar reliability is there because they've all had the same training for what they're looking for. I mean,
so the answer is yes.
Pardon me?
So the answer is yes.
Well, no. It's investigated when it's sent to Kickboard, and whoever fields it at the school then can make the determination based on looking at video, talking to students, and what actually happened on the bus. It was, they would say it's a fight.
So they will be currently, then they will be investigating all incidents that are documented through Kick School. Who's doing all that?
Well, we've got...
It just sounds like a big process. We never dealt with that before, so I'm trying to figure out. So when the last time I remember the conversation was bus drivers and them document their own stuff, they don't document Power School. So I'm just trying to...
Well, we don't document in Power School, but we submit it through a Google Doc. And that Google Doc is the gospel of what's happened up till now. Now Kickboard has been implemented, and Kickboard is the way that all referrals are done in all of our elementary buildings. I can't speak for how it's done at the high school or the secondary. David would be able to speak to that. But we did it that way because we wanted them to all be trained on what they're looking for, because their kindness is what we're trying to implement, and getting students to know what their good, right behavior is. So it's a teaching tool also.
So I think to answer your question, Darla, if I'm understanding it correctly, is that the bus drivers handle low-level discipline on the bus, and then, but if it escalates up, then it's brought in and is addressed by the principal, okay, or the dean, or this AP in the building, and so that's where then that information should be placed into, because if they hand out any further discipline into Power School, because it's part of the log system.
Okay. So Kickstart is being implemented now in order to get that information over to the school itself in order to integrate it with the current record on record. So they'll all be logged in?
There'll be reports and stuff that can be pulled out of Kickboard on referrals and behaviors that are reported from bus staff.
Yeah. Yep. I'm just thinking about we're spending money. What are we going to spend money on? What's important? You know, I felt at the time remembering that was super important.
Well, the problem, Like, we have a lot of referrals. This student will not sit down. Mm-hmm. Student stands while the bus is moving. What do you do? If you write them up four times for that, what do you do?
The school has to. You want me to answer that?
No. Oh. I mean, what do you do? The school has to show that student what the proper behavior is, because maybe they've never been shown what proper behavior is. So it's a learn. We're using it as a learning tool.
I get it.
Seriously.
And we're excited by, our staff is excited by it being this, it's uniformed.
Yes.
Dollar questioner.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I'm looking at the costs from the first year through the third year.
Yep.
And it's very inconsistent. I'm pretty familiar with maintenance costs on software and licensing. For example, TripFinder, $5,000 first year, then what appears to be a maintenance fee, 25%, $1,250. And then it goes up to $1,313. And a lot of these go up by small amounts on the third year, which is, in my opinion, my experience, pretty strange. I guess any reason why that is? Have they explained that to you?
They have not. I know the initial cost is up there because it includes all the training.
Yeah.
And our staff, including myself, have never been trained in TransFinder.
Okay.
So everything we know because we go, it should do this. Let's figure it out.
Yeah.
So the initial cost is definitely high because of all those different.
That I understand. It's just the second and third year. Second year drops down, which you would expect.
Yeah.
Third year goes back up by a small amount.
Yep, and we can definitely get answers for that.
We'll inquire to see if we can get the same.
Yeah.
It always is.
And that's those are questions we can definitely ask our rep.
Yeah, because in my experience, doesn't make sense.
Anybody else have a question?
What is the enter or exit the geo alert zone? What is that?
Geo alert zone. Yep, that's the zone where the parents can set up, so like about 5 minutes away from the bus, so it would alert.
So it would be student specific?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. And they would only get information on their student.
Okay.
And if they didn't want it, they didn't have to sign up for it.
So the attendance tracking requires Wayfair attendance. Is that something that's included in this? Or
yes.
So Wayfair attendance is?
It has to, yeah, that has to do with the badging on and off and the attendance records.
And that's part of TripFinder, ViewFinder? What was that on
there? Wayfinder.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't see that.
Corner of your first page. Upper left corner of your first page.
I did bring a couple of these, which has some printouts of the things if anybody wants to read more.
Yeah. So these are the same.
Yeah, if you got another one, I'd certainly like to see it.
Thank you.
It's referring to
that. Oh, okay, great. Thank you.
The parent side of it, yeah.
Yeah. Thanks.
It's good.
That's nice. Yeah.
So what we wanted to do tonight, and you can see as you go through there, you get into the hardware, and that's where the cost comes up. And so the Samsung, what we've been trying to talk to about is, does it have to be on a Samsung? Because we have iPads. Can we use our own iPads?
Yeah.
What does that entail right there? So there's still more conversations being had. The reason it's in here tonight, though, is this project, it's a long onboard. It's not one of those things that you sign up today and in 3 weeks it's up and going. What you'll be making a decision on, and our hope is that it's in front of you December, at latest is January, is it's up and running for next fall. That's when we sat down with them. It is a long run out because of the training. But we wanted to give put this in front of you just so you begin, again, are aware of things that of the new technologies out there when it comes to transportation, to routing, to communication devices, to parents. Down the road, you know, one of the things when we look at the attendance side of it, and you know, we kind of commented about the badges, right? Kids get on buses. Well, that's a great piece of knowledge. Know exactly what kids are on that bus should something happen to that bus. Mm-hmm. The day is coming. And when that day is gonna be here, I'm not sure, but that day is coming, that same thing's gonna be in each building.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're gonna be badging, so you know who's in your buildings right there. Mm-hmm. And so that, and when it comes to a student attendance, it is kind of nice to know that you, these kids have all been already kind of checked in there. So that, that component is coming down the road. It's not here for us yet today, but the busing one though, that is, it's wonderful technology now that is somewhat of affordable. I think what you wanted to see really is, you're talking about like a $30,000, $36,000 price tag for each year. And we can talk about what years two and three and four would look like, because I think, Tom, your point is very clear that we can see how it steps up on year three. What does years four and five look like? Are we going to be seeing that about 2% increase each year, or what does that look like there? But what we were spending is about $13,000 roughly, plus or minus a little bit there, annually on TransFinder, okay? And what you would see is that after year one, that number would then obviously increase dramatically.
Can't write the software?
Oh, he can write anything. He's super intelligent.
So they're working on my pre-trip.
This page?
The tablets.
Like the next page that has, because the first page technically takes us up to 31,000.
Yep, and then you have the
and
hardware.
And then the next page takes us up to 123,000.
Yep.
So, like, this is just all the, what, hardware stuff? All the, you have to buy. Like,
so we would have to install GPSs on the bus. We would have to install hardware to hold the tablets securely to meet the Federal Motor Carriers regulations. Currently, they're saying that this supports Androids, not iPads. So that would be in there as well. Zonar is a company that does GPS. So that is a name brand, per se, if you want to look at it that way. They are their own company that specialize in that side of the systems. And TransFinder and Zonar have a working relationship.
So what is this really going to cost?
Well, if we have...
I'm not even more confused.
Yeah.
$123,000.
So year one, if we went with this... And we can't get them to move off of the tablets, it's $123,000. Then
there's
two and three after that, it's $36,000. That's what we're working on with it. It's all about that tech purchase is the big part. That's your the hardware for the GPS, the cradles, the tablets, installation.
How much did you spend on the GPS we're using now?
Well, I think that was around 100, but that... That's a GPS built into the T-Mobile card.
How much was it?
I don't want to say for sure.
That's all right.
But that was also using.
But that was
80. It was what, 85%?
I didn't get the number.
It was 85% covered with E-rate funding.
I just want to know the cost.
Sure. I don't know that.
Would you say 100?
It was around 100,000, I thought.
Maybe a
and
more.
You just installed them, you said?
They were purchased a while ago, but it has to follow the E-rate process. But they just actually got installed. Couple weeks ago, they finished up.
Week and
so
a half ago, yeah.
A couple weeks ago, we installed GPSs that we spent $100,000 for, and now we're wanting to get new GPSs for another $92,000.
Well, they weren't GPS.
They weren't purchased
product.
For GPS.
We purchased them for the T-Mobile 5G card.
Yeah, but you told me that that's how we got on this whole topic. Remember, I wrote it all down.
I said not to count them as GPS. GPSs is what I said.
You said what?
I said don't count them as GPSs because we don't know if they're going to be compatible.
Yeah.
But they need a GPS.
Right.
Right, but it was originally purchased not for the GPS.
For the 5G.
For the card.
And the internet access on the bus.
That's what I thought.
And it does, the cradle points do have some GPS capability, but we're not sure without having additional conversations with TransFinder if that cradle point GPS is
I'm sure it will be.
I'm sure.
No. That'd be too easy. Come on.
Maybe we can train.
So there's a lot of conversation that needs to be had yet, it sounds like.
Yeah, we literally just found out about the cradle points and the GPS tracking last week.
Okay.
So, yeah.
I found out today, so thank you.
And that's why we said it's really more, this is all for your information, so that way it's, today is the first day for you to hear about this, but not the last day. Especially knowing what Patty was sharing is that, you know, what's the number of reasons that their phones are ringing out there, right? And those purposes. So you're at least hearing maybe ways to resolve the phone calls heading out to transportation. So more to come on that.
And better with our community, I think.
Yep.
And this is coming from
We haven't decided that yet because we haven't even come up with a recommendation to you.
The Darla Myers Foundation.
We could probably use a sinking fund, can't we?
Thank you.
Because it's buses.
That's a sinking fund.
Dave's like, maybe.
They have another project for the sinking fund?
Thank you, Patty.
Thank you very much.
So, yep, next.
Flexibilities, we have to frame it as, like, not, we can't use the word renewal.
Right.
It would have to be considered a completely separate sinking fund in order to use those additional flexibilities.
There we go. Okay, we got this. Because we should get another $2 million in, what, February or something, so.
So the next item was the mass communication school safety. I'd ask, ask Mr. Payne to talk about this and share some thoughts with you on just a cost of it. And this is a conversation I know we've had before, but we had to bring it back because when we're talking about the ability to completion of projects and the mass communication side of it, and when we've been doing our school safety work, we're really looking at trying to take out, not use people. If we want mass communication, we want communications to work quickly, not relying on staff to have to make those phone calls, because in a crisis situation, we've learned already that that can't happen. And we saw that firsthand when we did the mock drill at the high school over a year ago. So I asked Mr. Payne to just kind of come in and show you guys what this is all about there. So, Dave?
So, thank you. So, what the first part I'd like to just go over is the completion of the initial bond work, which was phase one of the mass notification, which included the PA systems at each of our buildings. There's three sites that currently don't have it completed, and that's this building, the administration building, Fenmore, and the Kinney Bush Math and Science Center. So if you look down there, this is some tentative costs. We've reached out to five vendors to get updated quotes. But this is based off what we paid for the middle school, kind of giving us a guideline so you have an idea of the cost, which would be roughly around $100,000. We did put what the cost was when we brought it to the board about a year and a half ago. It was about $136,000. We since then tried to save some money by working in placing speakers and locations. They didn't have to be in every nook and cranny like there would be in a school. In a school, you got to make sure if a student's in a room and there's an emergency, they're going to hear it, where at an office building, we don't have to be that detailed. So maybe we put one in the hallway that would cover three offices as opposed to one in each office. So that's why there's a little bit less cost there.
I remember the last time you talked about the mass communication system, because it's been brought up a few times, I had said, can you give us a full accounting of what we have spent up to date on this entire system? Because it's like being pieced together, and it seems like it's coming to us in pieces. And so I had requested that information the last time we talked about it. Were you able to put that together?
Yes and no. So the reason we can do the talk about how it was built. It wasn't really pieced together. It was done based on bond.
The way the information came to us was this much, then this much, then this much. And so it wasn't like the very start. It was like, okay, it's going to be $1 million. And it was like, okay, this is $300,000. This is another $200,000. This is another.
The reason that was is you got on the board right after that. So before that, when the bond was passed, it showed how much each building was going to use towards mass notification and the path we were going to follow. And bid pack two, which was about 10 of the buildings, was done at once through AMCOM, did that, bid it out. So I can give you those numbers. We can look those up.
The way the bid package information came through, it just told you who the person was that did the work. It didn't actually tell me.
And that's the problem, and I'll explain that. The reason that is, so for instance, on bid pack three, the high school and Custer were done. Well, the electrician's the one that got assigned that work. So it's hard for them to tell you what was used for the electrical and what they subcontracted out to CRT, which was the ones that did it. That's why I say I can give you a rough estimate, but I might not be able to give you 100%. Then the third purchase was the middle school, which we did internally. So I can give you those three separate prices for you to update, and I'll do that in this week's board briefs.
This has nothing to do with Red Letter. This has nothing to do with any of those other
Well, AMCOM was the first contractor, CRT was the second, and Red Letter was the third.
So they're all working together as part of, I'm just trying to figure this out.
It was three
if
separate.
If we had it written down, that's why I asked for it, it would make it easy so I wouldn't have
But these are just all vendors.
That's
they're
my
all,
point.
They're all purchasing
they
the same.
Doing?
We can definitely do that in this week's board brief.
Well, hold on. You know what I'm talking about? Thank you. Yeah.
Well, it's all the same. They're all putting in the same components, like the Viacom system. It was just.
No, I was just saying, how much from the start of this project until completion, money has been, ballpark, I get it, spent on a mass notification system.
I think we did put it in board briefs, but it was again, I couldn't give you exact, but it's roughly
it
around $2 million.
But we've spent already $2 million
of the bond.
On putting in a mass notification system. And we are still not done.
Yeah. This was part of the board voted this piece that we're taking now down to complete it.
Yeah.
What we did is we pulled the middle school out and just did the middle school. So now we want to come back and try to get these three buildings done, and that would complete phase one.
That's only phase one?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, phase two would be much less. Phase two would be what we call the mass notification.
I thought that's what this was called. It says all mass.
But you have to have the trunk system put in so you can put that. Basically, you're going to add a module to it.
Yeah. So we put in the Valcom system, which includes a controller, which gives you your standard PA system in a building. But it also includes features that you could connect to it via modules to do what you would consider mass notification. So for instance, once all these buildings are completed, we could say if you push this button, these three things would happen. Doors would lock, text would go out, lights would flash, or a radio signal would go out. Or like that's what the mass notification does. We have met with a couple vendors, Moss Telecommunications and Valcom, and talked to them about, here's about 10 things that Mr. Shaw can work with ACAP on to say, these out of these 10 features, we want to start with these five.
Yep.
But to do that, we need to get these three buildings completed so the building, the district will be at a certain standard.
You have all your hardware in.
Yes.
And a great example is this. You have a building that is either in a lockdown, a secure mode, and or is in evacuation, okay? And what we realize is that at that moment in time, once that, from the mass side of it is, someone pushes that button, the communication then, based on that, is to 911, to Fenmore, to here. And the reason going to Fenmore is our maintenance custodial guys all then are aware. And if it's an evacuation, transportation is now prepping out to get buses ready to go to the reunification site. This building is made instantly aware so that then we're already beginning to get our communication systems up and going. And what we learned at the high school level when they had that drill happen, they were 5 minutes later making a call to 911, and about 15 minutes later before they made a call to central office about a situation occurring. Mm-hmm. And so when we talk about like the mass communication, it's the elimination of the people so that if X happens, it's an automatic, and I think we, and so...
takes a human factor out of it.
It does, because when we get into a stressful situation, we learn there that stuff can happen. So that's all this, that's where it gets that next level.
Completely putting your trust in technology is never the most intelligent way to go, because technology is unforgivable.
100%.
And technology can do something.
This is only going to be part. This will give you an option. This will be one more option to help.
So we're going to put in more. I would like start to finish. That'd be super cool.
And I think once you see the plan, you'll see where it's going to start coming together as far as once we complete the phase one and we start talking about all the options of mass notification and to see what we do. Because we can start out with a smaller, cheaper package at first, but then year two, year three, you could design anything, because basically you're just connecting programs, you know, integrators that will say, I'm going to take my hardware and make it talk to your hardware, so when you do this action, this outcome happens. So it's basically, this foundation's huge, and Valcom is a good manufacturer of that. So we do, I think Kohler and our architects and engineers, when they picked Valcom, did a good job for our foundation. We just need to complete these three buildings, and then we can move on to the second phase.
Dave, these installation estimates, is that 100% a third-party install, or is that a combination of your people and them?
Combination. So, for instance, we've done all the maintenance since it's been put in. So if there's a bad speaker, we have an attic stock in the back. Where there's missing speakers, we might have Red Letter install a cable, and then we'll mount the speaker. The programming, our staff handles turning it up and down. The maintenance is pretty much taken over by us now. But it's that physical purchase of the equipment is a majority of this cost, and data cables.
So on those sheet, you know, that you gave us, it says systems to be integrated may include access control, district radios, fire alarms, video recording, and many others we are still researching. So it sounds like there is not a start to finish. There is a what do we want?
Yep, 100%. And that's what we need to finish. What we're asking for is before we get to the mass notification. Yeah. This piece here is just to put the hardware in, and so then we'll come up with that list, right, which we may only want four things this year for start of school. But the next year we could add on and add on.
So my further thought is, as I'm listening to this all build out, what is the connection with FEMA? What is the connection with the FEMA notification system and this notification system?
That would be part of mass notification. So if Mr. Shaw and ACAP said, you know what, we want to integrate that in, so when FEMA hit an alert or something happened, it would immediately went through our system. That's where that integrator would help us do that.
And FEMA then could push the button to do it. Mm-hmm.
Or if there was a tornado alarm,
exactly,
tornado warning. Now, it's up to us if we want to do that. That's, you know.
But it looks, sounds like that's the plan.
It would permit, what it would allow us to do is kind of what we showed right here with TransFinder, is you start out really small, so we have a base, and then as technology or thoughts begin to develop further over years, it could grow. On the FEMA side or others, it does allow for that. But back to you poised to point out a very good point, though, at the beginning is not pulling out the complete human factor. So you have a tornado warning in our area. We had a great discussion about this 2 weeks ago. Well, we might have a tornado warning here in our area, but we know that more of the funnel cloud is northwest of Raisinville. Does Custer need to be into a mode right there where they into the hallway and all that stuff? Thank you. But that's where we've already been working through that side of it. So even to that degree, you still have to bring the human factor into play.
So this is very highly customizable.
100%.
Yeah.
So that brings me to the question about all these lockdown and these whatever you're calling them.
Mm-hmm.
I think a report on that, the frequency of those would still be beneficial. I know I mentioned that before, but when I get confused because it seemed like when the middle school, I did read you guys' comments on this. When the kid put his finger in picnic table.
That was at Arborwood.
The whole, or whatever it was.
Yeah.
The whole entire building had to stay in their rooms. And so all I can think of is in my head is this picnic table had to have been in one location. Why did the entire school and all classrooms need to go into that mode? So to me, that's computer push, not human thought.
No, what that is it's we always debrief after those situations have occurred and have a conversation around should we gone into that mode at that point in time or put a communication out that says no students on the playground because we all have medical personnel here on site.
Can we get a report, like monthly report, like in our board briefs or something, on the frequency of lockdowns, the types, and the analysis of those? I think
we don't keep track, though.
You don't keep track of lockdowns?
Of lockdowns, yeah. If we have to go into a true lockdown, but if
what
we have,
what do you call those things when you?
It's called secure mode, and so when we have.
So you don't track secure modes.
So if we.
I think that was just a teach in place.
That is a teach in place. I'm sorry.
What's it? Okay, so I'm just
teach in place. Yes.
So a teach in place. We have secure mode.
We'll get you a copy of that in your board briefs this week.
And it's happening and for what? Because that didn't make sense to me. I don't. Mm-hmm. Maybe it made sense to everybody else, but I did not get that. So those are the same thing.
Yeah. You're going to have in your board briefs this week
copy of
ours.
Yeah.
So you can see that.
Now you want to go to a closed session?
I would love to get you guys a closed session. We got some great news for that.
Can we get a motion to go into closed session?
So moved.
Support.
report.
Jamie, could we have a roll call, please?
Yes, Dr. Behrens.
Yes.
Mr. Hatton.
Yes.
Mrs. Myers.
Yes.
Mr. Van Wachenova.
Yes.
Mrs. Williams.
Yes.
Mr. Zimmerman.
Yes. And when those doors are closed, we'll be in closed session.
Want to make sure your mics are closed.
Who played with thermostat? It went down to 70.
Yeah, it's
I know, it's too high. It's in the 70s now.
It was 67.
Like boom, boom.
Every question you ask, I drop it 1 degree.
If that's the case, it would be negative 10.